Liftoff will start in T-minus 10 seconds. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We have ignition.
Welcome to ESA Explores, an official podcast of the European Space Agency. You're tuning into a brand new series of our podcast where we'll take you behind the scenes to meet with our new astronauts, following their incredible journey through training as they reach for the stars. And let me tell you, this first episode kicks off with a blast. We had the pleasure of speaking with ESA project astronaut Markus Wandt on the brink of his first ever spaceflight during his final training week at the European Astronaut Center in Cologne, Germany. Currently, he's in Florida, in the USA, preparing for liftoff. Join us as we explore how the past year transformed Markus's life, taking him from the cockpit of a Swedish jet pilot to a seat aboard a spacecraft, propelling him toward the cosmic adventure of a lifetime. I'm your host, Laura Zumühlen. Denzel Lorge is on the sound desk, and this is ESA Explores. Hi, Markus. I'm so glad to have you on our podcast today.
Hi. Yeah, it's great to be here. Thank you.
How are you doing today? You've just been out of a big press conference here at the European Astronaut Center in Cologne. How are you feeling?
Yeah, it's great. It feels great. It was a nice press conference, a lot of good questions and some good challenging questions, I guess, which I like because then you get the opportunity to talk about the why and, my point of view on this.
Great. And because this is your last week here in Europe at all, or just in Cologne at the Astronaut Center?
It is last week in Europe. So I'm going back to US on Saturday and then doing the rest, small parts of the training that's left, and then entering quarantine and off to space.
Off to space. Wow. But let's rewind a bit. A little over a year ago, the European Space Agency picked a new group of astronauts. Out of 22,500 applicants, from across ESA's 22 member states, 17 individuals passed the tests and were selected to be part of the class. Five of them started their path as ESA astronaut candidates, which means that they started basic astronaut training with ESA soon after their selection, in April 2023. Make sure to stay tuned to learn more about them in our upcoming episodes. Furthermore, another 11 members of the ESA astronaut class form a reserve pool. Equally qualified to kickstart their basic training with ESA, they stand ready to be chosen for missions when future opportunities arise. Our guest today, Markus Wandt from Sweden, was among them. He became an ESA project astronaut when the chance came to fly on a commercial human spaceflight opportunity with Axiom Space, diving into intensive training in June 2023. So yeah, you're the first in the new generation of European astronauts to embark on this commercial spaceflight with Axiom Space, and could you just take us briefly through the steps since last year?
Yeah, so the selection for the class was November last year, and I was very happy to be selected a part of the class, and I was part of the reserve. And the concept around the reserve are several, I think, but one of them was if there would be an additional flight opportunity, you could get activated as a ESA project astronaut, and that's exactly what happened. So April this year, I found out that that was happening, and just a few weeks later, I was standing in Houston starting my training.
Wow. And have you been here a lot as well in Cologne?
Yeah, I've been here a lot of weeks actually during this these 7 months that I've been training now. So first, after the first month in Houston, I went here to do kind of initial training ESA-wise for the Columbus part as well, and also some general parts. And then after being back in US for a while, I came back to do more proper Columbus training. And then ESA has raised ambition throughout this preparation, which is great, and which I really appreciate. And so then I did the operator level and the specialist level for Columbus as well. And then some more general astronaut parts, which I didn't have prior to. Mm. So some of the training was almost backwards. I started to train for the mission, but then we did some more general stuff, which is great. So now I have better base to stand on when I go into space.
Oh, wow. So yeah, because we've been talking to some of the other astronaut candidates or from the class 2022 as well, and they're here for basic training right now, and they do 1 year of basic training. So for you, it was all squeezed like in a shorter yeah. time period, right?
Yeah, it's super, super intense. And,
yeah.
Which is fun, and I appreciate that, but I have to also have to stay on time and focused all the time,
yeah.
because I can feel so when actually I don't feel it until I get a little bit behind on something, then I can say, oh, there is no margin to get behind. I have to stay mm-hmm. ahead all the time.
Yeah.
But it's working really well, and I have such good support from all the trainers here at ESA and the other organizations as well, and the agility and the way that everyone have been able to replan or make things work or be super flexible with what we're doing, and actually also analyze what do I need specifically, and what background do I have, what do we not need to focus as much on, where can we press on more, that has helped a lot. And so yeah, it's been great.
Has everything or every lesson been fairly new to you, or were there a few things that you already knew from prior experiences or from your other job?
I would say that there have been new components or new applications in every lesson, probably.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the things I recognized from what I've done earlier.
Because you're a fighter pilot, right?
Yeah, right. So exactly. So I'm a fighter pilot, and I've also been working as a test pilot
yeah.
for a decade, which helps a lot, because a lot of the vehicles, when you look at the ISS, for instance, a lot of the ways of communicating or designing the system or thinking about redundant systems or safety and all that, I'm very used to working with. So it's that's good in the way that I can just apply the new application, really, which I'm learning here. And some things are totally new,
yeah.
And others are very similar to what I've been doing. Also a little bit from the engineering background, and some of the expeditionary behavior I learned in the army when I started out as an airborne ranger. It was, okay, this is the expedition behavior, and it kind of reminds me, okay, keep all your stuff in the right place, and if you take this out, put this back into this.
Oh,
and like those small little details that makes the day flow, and that also makes you ready for contingencies or emergencies.
Yeah. And is there any particular training session that really stood out to you, or that was most fun for you?
Well, actually, I think every training session where you do it with the whole crew or as a team
mm-hmm.
Is something that stands out to me, because that's so much fun to have challenges within the team, or to feel that you succeed as a team, or that you have things that you need to work on, and then talk about that during the debrief. Oh, we should do it like this. Yeah, let's plan like this. Oh, that's not flexible enough. Let's do it like this instead. And I really like that dynamic.
And also
some of the science parts and payload works where not necessarily the thing we're actually training, but the discussion that sparks, or what you could do in the next step, or why are we doing this, and why is it important in microgravity, or why, and all those why questions, and also the possibilities you could do after, that triggers me.
Axiom 3 will be the first commercial human spaceflight mission for ESA. During the trip to the International Space Station, ISS, Marcus will serve as a mission specialist on a Dragon spacecraft. He'll be sharing the ride with three other crewmates. Have you been training a lot with your crew, or with whom did you train?
Yeah, so it's some of the training is only me and a trainer, which is very efficient. It also does not allow you to have any micro sleep, because you are only doing one-on-one, right? So but it's very, very efficient, and you learn a lot, and it becomes very tailored for
mm-hmm.
the questions I have. And some of the training I've been with parts of the crew where we've been, maybe the facility doesn't support more than two or three, and then we're only two or three, and some training is with full crew. Actually now, recent time, is most of the training I've been with full crew. And that also has a lot of benefits when it comes to spreading knowledge within the team, and also finding out who has a lot of knowledge within this field, and who needs a little bit more here, and to get that dynamics going. So we are aware of that when we're going.
Yeah. And I also understand it's a very international team, and also here at ESA, and in general to all the places that you traveled. How was that for you, working in an international environment like this?
Yeah, it is. And that's very stimulating. It's a lot of to finding out what the cultural differences
mm-hmm.
And also similarities, and also see when you can use those cultural differences not as a threshold or a friction, but rather see it as a strength. Yeah. Where you can see, okay, oh, so that's natural to you. That's interesting. Let's see what I can do with that information. Or maybe then you should do these parts. And also that also creates a dynamic, but you have to be very open to it. Mm-hmm. And I think also, but that goes for every team, I guess, because individuals are different. And sometimes it's hard to tell whether it's the individual or whether it's the background and nationality.
Yeah.
But very early, I started to ask questions because we are four different nationalities out of four people. And actually getting on ISS, we have so many nationalities.
Even more, yes.
Yeah. And we also have dual citizenship. So in our crew, we are four, we are six nationalities, right? Four people. So, and the... So I asked the question really early when things were maybe surprising or I didn't get it right away, the way to act or the way to react. No big things at all, small things. I asked right away, is this natural to you? Is this because it's you or is it because your background is? And then we started those discussions really early, which is very enriching.
I can imagine. Is there any example you could share with us, like a specific thing that happened or that you found out about a culture?
I found out so much. I think, concrete example. Yeah, I should always have that, of course. But it's, I think, you know, the way to, I don't know, the way to ask questions or the way to maybe not ask questions to superiors or the leadership followership things is pretty obvious in different cultures and also, which is also interesting because if you then come from a culture where the distance might be shorter and you ask those questions and then to see that gets a little bit of a reaction and then you can say, hey, it's very natural to do this and it's not at all considered to be disrespectful or so, and then talk about that. That's really interesting.
And you have to know, of course, because otherwise, that you're not offended by behavior of others.
Exactly. So few, I know questions I've asked where I have realized that, okay, this could be offensive maybe, but I still need to ask questions. So then I just say, all right, I don't want to offend you at all, but I still need to ask this question. So please tell me if you're offended by this now, because then I'm learning.
And then
I just ask the question.
And then if everybody's open about that.
Yes. Which is great, which has also, I think, created a very good harmony within the group. And that's important because all of a sudden you get into a situation where you don't agree or where something is not performed as well and someone should have done something and it didn't happen.
Yeah.
And if you don't have that harmony and trust from the beginning, that could be difficult to address in an efficient way.
Yeah.
But that it is not. Yeah. We can tell each other clearly, like, oh man, I'm sorry that did not work out for you, but I really need you to do this here. Otherwise, I cannot do that. And then, it's very respectful, but also very direct.
Yeah, communication is super important, and also especially when you're in this confined space space.
Oh yeah, exactly. And there are so many when some of the things you need to do, especially emergency situations, when you need to do things quickly, where you kind of rely on someone doing something else or commuting clearly that I will not be able to do it.
Yeah,
and then ask for help, also something that might be different in different cultures.
Oh yeah,
whether you can ask, and also by individuals.
Yeah,
that don't try for 10 minutes because we don't have 10 minutes. Ask me after 1 minute.
Yeah,
and then so that's but that's been a big, very stimulating and well functioning part of our training.
Yeah, I also read that you are writing down your thoughts and that this helps you to detach from emotions. How has this rational approach played a role in your preparation for the upcoming spaceflight?
So sometimes when I have a clear, well, it doesn't have to be clear, but when I have a thought that I figured that is kind of important, whether that's correct or not in my mind, especially if we don't have a, well, maybe not so much if there's a disagreement or so, or if it could be challenged. A way of challenging that for myself is to write it down, because then when I read it, I kind of hear it and read it, see like, well, that doesn't make sense. Why do I feel like that? Or seeing that, that's rational. That works out. So, okay, I can support it, but this and so let's go with that.
Yeah.
So sometimes, and also sometimes writing down, sometimes you just have a feeling of which direction to take, what to do. But when I have to put that in words, it becomes way more concrete. Like, okay, this is maybe how it should be done, and this is why I feel this way.
So you do this a lot, or?
Well, not a lot. It might be strong, but it
happens. Yeah, it happens. Yeah. And from all the training facilities to space centers like across the globe, you've been quite on a journey. And where did you spend most of the time actually now?
Houston. Yeah. So it's been most in Houston and then evenly distributed, I guess, between SpaceX, ESA, and SpaceX and ESA. Then just a little bit in Japan and a little bit in Florida. And, yeah.
So the training at ESA was mostly for the Columbus section, you said?
Yes, Columbus and payloads and some general astronaut things.
Astronaut things that you have to do. Yeah. During his two-week mission, Marcus will dedicate a lot of his time to conduct around 20 groundbreaking scientific activities and technology demonstrations. The experiments carried out on the ISS contribute to progress in various domains, such as physics, materials science, biomedical studies, human research, Earth observation, astronomy, or meteorology. And talking about the science you will conduct, is there any experiment or scientific research that you're most looking forward to do on the station?
So I don't want to say there is something that I'm most looking forward to, because there are, I'm looking forward to a lot for different reasons. But there are several things I'm looking forward to, though. Some examples would be, so I'm doing a lot of cognitive testing and stress testing for the orbital architecture. I'm interested in seeing what that will show or how that will actually affect. I'm starting to get interested, really, because I'm doing the baseline data collection right now. And also looking forward to the Thor Davis looking at lightning being observing from getting those pictures, and also to be also because it's also I get to be in the cupola and watch
so that's great.
And I'm looking forward to the robotics, or to work with the remote robots on ground, which also will be fun. But I'm actually looking forward to the maintenance tasks, and I'm looking forward to eating and everything. Yeah,
and so, how everything works in space.
Exactly.
I mean, how's life there?
And also the simple tasks, like I just have to unscrew these four things and remove the panel.
Which in itself can be exactly a challenge, or a very different task from how you have to do it on Earth.
So, that will be and so I'm kind of expecting from myself to make observations during that, because just getting the thing out might not be super complicated, but then observing how it is different, that would be fun.
And so your mission is called Moonin. Can you tell us a little bit more about how you came to that name and the mission design?
Yeah, exactly. So Moonin is one of Odin's raven. Odin is the one of the Viking gods, or the god. He sent out Hugin and Moonin, two ravens, every day to circle the Earth and get information back to him. And so now we have Andy Mogensen on orbit, right, with the mission Hugin.
Yeah.
And then I will be up there at the same time as him, as Moonin. So we'll have two Scandinavians in space at the same time, and we are flying over Earth, getting information back for the benefit of humankind, right? So that's kind of reason for the names, but also, and it's from Norse mythology, right? So from Scandinavia. And patch wise, so the patch has a raven on there, and it's flying over Earth, and you can see the moon or the sun in the background, whichever you want that yellow to be. And then the colors, blue and yellow, right? Swedish flag. And the you can also see the ISS above one of the wings of the Raven, and you can also see some shock waves on one of the from my background as a supersonic fighter pilot. So I guess I brought that in there a little bit. And you have Sweden in the background, and then you also have some stars up there with the in the shape of the Viking sign for protection. We'd be being there, getting information to protect Earth.
Oh, that's a very, very nice story. A beautiful patch as well. I've seen it.
Thank you.
And you mentioned Andy Mogensen already. So have you trained with him at all? Because he will be there at the same time.
Yeah, so no, we did not train. We weren't using it at the same time. So we did meet a lot, actually. And we talked and I met his whole crew 7.
Mm-hmm.
And the but we never got to do any training together. We were planning on getting emergency training thing together on station, but we'll do that with another crew that to get that integration working that will represent Crew 7 in that case.
And then that's what something I'm interested now in. So you said as a fighter pilot, I guess you're already used to some G forces and flying high. And do you think or expect it will be very different, the rocket launch?
Yeah, so some differences, or big differences, yeah. I would say. So the G-forces in a fighter jet is generally higher, unless you end up in a situation which would be a launch escape situation where you do a steep re-entry, then the G-force will be higher in the rocket, but otherwise not. And also, the when you fly a jet or an airplane, you when you turn the jet and pull, make a turn, mm-hmm. the G-force will be from your head down into the seat.
Right.
So NZ, the yeah. Z-axis.
Yeah.
And when you fly or when you launch or actually also re-entry, you are normally positioned seated but reclined. So you are in a laying down position, which makes the acceleration and the opposite force mm-hmm. Act in the X-axis, which would be through the chest into the back of the seat.
Yeah.
So you get pressed down in the seat towards your back instead. And that is actually a lot better because it doesn't draw, it doesn't pull or push or however you want to see the blood from the brain.
Yeah.
So it's even though you get pressed into the seat and you will get that funny face because it's being pushed back instead of down, it's still easier to cope with.
Yeah.
On the other hand, though, when you launch on a rocket, the G-force is applied for a much longer time. So it's pros and cons.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I enjoy G-forces. I guess
that's, I was going to ask it. It was I guess you're used to it and probably also like it. Have you done any centrifuge training as well?
Yeah, I did. So a few months ago, actually, in Philadelphia, I went to a facility and did the launch profile and the reentry profile mm-hmm. and some other profiles as well. Mm. And former in my work as a test pilot and fighter pilot, I've been in a centrifuge a lot, doing a lot of high Gs there. But also in the airplane, when we do fighting, it's you pull whatever G you need, right?
Mm-hmm.
When we do testing, I've actually appreciated when we've done high G testing. I don't know why, but it is a bit challenging and that's nice. I like
that. So. No seasickness, no motion sickness.
No, but that doesn't mean that you will not get space motion sickness, I guess, but it's not the same as motion sickness.
That's the one when you are in the space station or in microgravity?
Yeah, so when you get up to microgravity, and this you'll have to ask me after how it actually is, but I've been asking a lot of astronauts, and you might, there is an adaptation time,
mm-hmm.
and you might not feel awesome in the beginning.
Yeah,
and it's not the same as motion sickness, and it's not necessarily, even though you've been a pilot flying a lot of Gs and positive and negative and rapid motions, it doesn't mean that you are not susceptible for that. So we'll see. We'll see how that goes.
And yeah, you've been training a lot. It's been an intense time. Did you still find any time, like spare time, free time, to do any of your hobbies?
No.
No.
No. There is no spare time at all. But recovery time, some little recovery time here and there. But normally that recovery time is, well, when I go to the gym or when I do exercise, I tend to, well, relax my brain, I guess. So that works out nicely. But there's no space.
No space. Not at all. And then once on the station, someone already mentioned that you might be lacking a lot of sleep there because you're going for a short mission and that you will make the most of it. Are there any things that you personally want to do or any personal kind of projects or things that you really want to do on the station apart from the science?
I have a notebook with things I want to do, and it's from very basic free-floating things and myself to listen to specific sounds or just being. I'm a little bit cautious of being entirely overloaded. I don't want to do that, and the reason is I don't consider myself to be afraid of working, but I want to have a little bit of time just to get time to relax, and by being relaxed, absorb and reflect on what's there to remember it, to come down and be able to communicate that or have those feelings and not having to kind of make that up or assume that I felt something. I want to store that and I want to communicate that because to me, it's fantastic that I get this opportunity, but honestly, it's not me going to space. I want to
yeah,
get that back somehow. So yeah, so that's very important to me.
So you will keep us up to date during your mission, after your mission, on how it went. And
yes, that is my intention, definitely.
Perfect. Yeah. And maybe for the end, do you have any advice for people, or when people come to you right now already and say like, oh, I'm really inspired by your journey and what you do, I want to do something similar and work in the space sector. Is there anything you would say to them?
Oh yeah, go for it. So that's what I would say. Yeah. What's stopping you? Yeah. There's so much to do, and there are so many opportunities, and within, yeah, within space you can do, there are so many things. There yeah. are technology, there's medicine, there's so many things to do.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time today to speak to us. I wish you all the best for the launch. We will follow closely and hopefully speak to you after that again, if you have the time. And then you can tell us about all your experiences in space.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Thank you very much for having me here.
What an exciting time ahead. If you want to know more about Marco's mission, check out the Munin mission page at esa.int/Munin. That's MUNINN. And follow Marco's on social media. You'll find him at astro_Marcus on X, and ESA_Marcus is his handle on Instagram. You can also find us on X, at ESA Spaceflight, using the hashtag ESAExplores, to let us know what you think. Visit us on our official ESA Exploration blog at blogs.esa.int/exploration. And if you liked what you hear, don't forget to subscribe and share via your favorite podcast platform, so we can reach even more space fans. Thank you for listening to ESA Explores.